Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to my dog psychology radio show. My name is Dale McCluskey. I'd like to welcome you. On today's show, I have a very special guest. His name is Robert Masters, and he is out of Kansas City. And he's involved with dog training at both the animal or dog rehab level, as well as a dog trainer. And on my past shows, I've talked about, you know, what's wrong with dog training. Spent like 5 days talking about what's wrong in the dog training world, talk about this issue of this ideology at work. But on today's show, I'm going to emphasize on what's right in dog training, because there's people out there doing it right. And Robert Masters is one of the gentlemen that's doing it right. So I want to bring him on today, you know, just so he can discuss what he's doing, how he does it. And after about a few minutes here, once he kind of gives us some background as to what he does, I'm going to take some callers, and he'll be more than happy, I'm sure, to answer your questions. So welcome, Robert.
Hi, Dale. How's it going?
Good. Thanks very much for coming on to the show.
Ah, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Robert, can you, I guess, so you do just explain to the audience here, you know, you're from Canada, I guess, out of Kansas City. And just your, I guess the first question I'd have is your background as to, you know, what sparked your interest, or how young, I guess, you were when you got into dogs and dog training.
Sure. Yeah, so I think I have the same story as a lot of trainers, which is I adopted a dog that turned out to be dog aggressive. And, of course, you know, I adopted the dog not knowing that. And so I pursued a friend I had known from school, high school, that was a dog trainer by apprenticeship out of Chicago. And mm-hmm. I approached him to help me, and I kind of figured out I had a knack for it. And he sort of guided me through it. His name's Richard Tanner. He sort of guided me through it with my own dog, and then I pursued further and asked him if I could do sort of an apprenticeship with him. And I did that for about a year, and then I just took in as many, you know, books as I could. I decided that I could just sort of expound upon what he was showing me, and then also, like, I knew there was more to share. And he and I were different in that way. Like, he sort of had his way, and he didn't care to read a bunch of books anymore or anything like that. But I probably took in, and I was 25 at the time, I'm 30 now, but I probably took in 25 books that year. So that's kind of how I got started, and then I went professional after volunteering at a rescue. I started helping out some dogs there, just, you know, free of charge. And then there was an opening to teach their group class, which I thought was great that they had a group class for adopters. And they asked me if I could step in and try to teach it. They liked the work I'd done with my own dog, and that's how it started.
Wow. That's great. So how many years have you been doing it now, Robert, since you, I guess, you started to...
So I'm at year five now.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, so I'm you know, I'm working on getting more experience out there, but I think what has happened is that I've been able to sort of assume this role as, at least in my area, as sort of the last effort. So I kind of... That initially is what grew me, and I was very lucky. From when I stopped my apprenticeship to when I didn't have to have any other jobs besides dog trainer was only 2 months.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So I guess the question here is, so explain what you do for, you talk about the dog rehab part of that. How do you, I guess, give us a little bit of an overview as to how you go about that process, and, you know, how that kind of translates into rehabbing the dog and the dog going to a new home. How's the process work?
Oh, so through Scholarly Strays, I assume, is what you're kind of talking about. And so Scholarly Strays started, that's like my small little rescue side project. And that started basically as an answer to a lot of my frustrations in the rescue world. And so what I thought was, everybody in rescue is sort of ignoring some of the key issues. There was a study done of sheltering, and I can't remember who did it. I know it's posted on like Pet Finder.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it, one of the most common the highest commonality that I saw in the study was like 97% of dogs in the shelter have never had training.
Mm-hmm.
And so, my partners and I at Dogs Listen to Me have tried many times to partner with rescues, and usually the partnerships are short term. There's this one dog, can you help us? And we've never been able to establish a rescue that cared enough about the training side to make it a part of their program for all dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided we would start our own years of going back and forth and jumping about through rescues. And, you know, the thing I think that is the most sort of insane is I would talk to rescues and say, you know, at the very least, you know, they have gift shops around here. Most of the rescues have little, retail centers. And
mm-hmm.
I couldn't even convince them that they should carry a dog training book. And when
mm-hmm.
I would post this and I would say, you sell 500 kinds of leashes, 10 kinds of poles, 20 kinds of toys, 50 different kinds of treats, don't you think in that store you could put in, like, one dog training book? And at the time I would even have said, you can even put in the wrong dog training book. It would be at least better than nothing. And I would get... I would post these things on our page encouraging rescues to do this, and we would get comments that would say, surely you can acknowledge that not all dogs need training. And
sure.
it blew my mind. I'm like, no, I absolutely won't acknowledge that. That's absurd. But that's sort of where we're left with. So then we decided we would do a rescue, and we thought we would be able to do sort of like most rescues do, and pull, like rescues would pull from a shelter. And so, like a municipal shelter. And so I thought, okay, well, we'll start a rescue and then we'll just pull where everybody pulls in this area, which is Kansas City Pet Project. And that is a rescue organization that has a contract with the city to run our city shelter. But as it turned out, Kansas City Pet Project has publicly stated that they will not relinquish dogs to us because of training methods.
Yeah, and that's, Robert, you're up into the insanity part of this. I mean, it's one of these things where you pretty much have to break away, and I guess you've done that. But I absolutely know where you're coming from. I talk about that a lot. But, unfortunately, there's a lot of frustration with that type of thing. It'll appear totally insane. But anyway.
So now what we've had to do is we've just sort of taken dogs that have they would have fallen into the rescue system somewhere along the way. We haven't had many, but basically we've had two dogs that were owner surrenders. So we took them in, and then we put them through what on my business side is our board and train program. And the idea also came from this idea that I had clients. I was so ingrained in rescue that I had clients that had purebred dogs that they had bought, and they were a few of them were like worried to tell me. They would ask us like, "Do you guys work with not rescue dogs?" And I'm like, "Absolutely, of course."
Sure.
And most of them had wanted to rescue a dog, or had rescued a dog and have had problems. And so I thought, why don't we try to create like a really compelling rescue dog? And compelling for a reason beyond just being $25. So I would pitch these ideas. I originally thought somebody else in rescue will do this. And I won't have to do it. If I just put the idea out there, somebody who's already into that world more would do it. But that has not been the case.
No.
So we decided to do it ourselves. We've taken in two dogs that were abandoned. I live near a dog park.
So
I've had two of my dogs that come from the dog park, just being abandoned there. And as of now, that's probably basically how I'm going to get a majority of my dogs. It's just actually finding them myself. or people finding me. And then, yeah, we thought, okay, will people pay? We also wanted to approach it from like a smarter business perspective, just for the sake of like sustainability. You know, I'm sure you read all the time about compassion fatigue. And I think compassion fatigue that these rescue people are speaking of is probably exacerbated by the fact that, you know, they're struggling to make ends meet. You know, they're constantly in the red. And
yeah,
so
it's a real problem. I know here in Florida, there's, you know, you see a lot of the fosters, they're the people that take in, will foster the dogs for, and their burnout rates is incredible.
Yeah, so we thought we could combat that, because I figured if I put a dog through this program, I could probably adopt them out for a much higher price, which also allows me to weed out not serious adopters. You know, a lot of people don't like to say that, you know, skin in the game is a part of it financially. But in my experience, you know, the $25 dog is going to get given up on a lot quicker than the $1,500 dog.
That's true.
And a lot of people told me, no way, nobody's ever going to pay $1,500 for a mutt. But so far, that's not proven true. And I tried to make that a deal. Like, you save you get a dog trained already for less than you would if you got a dog for $25 and then brought it to you for training. And so that's kind of where it came from.
Good.
But basically, it's all obedience focused. That's kind of my like underwire for everything. We focus on a strong like dialogue with the dog. But of course, you know, I think there are other rescues doing training. But the number one thing we're seeing, of course, is like less leadership and more love. And this love principle, like love will fix all. But of course, like, yeah, no, it's definitely very, like, leadership-based once the Obedience Foundation is there. And the Obedience Foundation helps get us there, of course, because at least now we have a dialogue with the dog, and the dog is understanding what we expect of them. You know, and that's what probably one of the number one questions people ask us is, well, you know, if every time I want the dog to let the dog out in the morning from his kennel to go outside, and I don't want him to go charging through the house, do I have to tell him heel every single time and heel him to the door? I'm like, no. Once the dog understands what's going on and it's clear, you know, you can let him out and he'll run, and you can say nope, and then he'll come back, and you can guide him. And so, it's a pretty simple program. Most of our dogs actually have been claimed before they've even finished the training. Which has been really nice thing is that, you know, we took one dog to like a beer festival, and somebody immediately stepped up, and nobody has yet balked at the price. I mean, that's what we charge, $1,500 for a dog. Nobody has yet balked at the price, and some people at the beer festival, the people that wanted the first dog, were like, we'll take him right now. And I said, well, you know, he's got to go through his training, and thankfully, you know, they valued that.
Sure.
And even our newest dog has already been claimed, and we've had him for a week.
Great. Yeah, I saw that on, I think, Facebook. You had that posted on a Facebook posting there of a new dog there you had they claimed with. And the vet, I believe that they kick in a little bit, too, to help with the you know, flea and tick stuff or whatever. Robert, is that on your?
Yeah, the veterinarian clinic where the dog was living kicked in and supplied all these things, and we've been really fortunate that that's happened a lot. When you adopt a dog from us, you get everything. You get lifetime training for the dog, like if you have problems. When they adopt the dog, like these people who took the most recent dog, and this happened with the other dog that was claimed right off the bat, is that during the process of the dog's board and train, basically, with me, they're coming along and visiting, and I'm showing them what we're doing.
Okay.
So they're getting essentially like five private lessons because they come every week, and then they get one when I drop the dog off, and then I come back a couple weeks later and make sure we're all on top of things. And then the dog comes with everything. You get a 6-foot leather leash. You get a prong collar if needed. The standard collar the dog comes with is a martingale. And then you get an e-collar technologies remote collar. And a kennel. So
again,
the whole goal being, the whole goal being super compelling. You know exactly what you're getting into. So
very good. Oh, that sounds great. And so I guess you're talking about the vets. So do you find you have vets that are kind of online with what you're doing?
What's that?
Do you have the local vets online that are helping to online with what you're doing?
Yeah. I have one particular vet, Dearborn Animal Clinic, is like 10 minutes from my house, and they're my personal vet, and they've really jumped on board. And I've had I've got about 3 other vets that refer to us. You know, unfortunately, again, don't want to dwell on it too much, but a lot of the vets have also been sold the all positive shtick around here, and we have a pretty renowned animal behaviorist in the area, and so that is sort of a lot of the default for most veterinarians around here. But we've had a few that we've become friendly with and have been able to talk to and kind of show them the way, you know.
Sure. I think it's difficult. I mean, I think the more I talk about this stuff, it's more like trainers have a lot of experience and are thinking properly. We'll see the problems more so than the average dog owner who, you know, just is, you know, thinking about their emotions. And so that positive, or how it's kind of packaged up that way, is very attractive. And so, you know, it's very difficult to kind of counter that. And I think that what you're doing is clearly the right way, just by, you know, in results, you know, showing that I think sometimes you don't give people enough credit sometimes. People are smart enough to figure this out, but it's definitely very difficult. I know from what you're doing and other trainers are doing to, you know, counter that without coming off very negative. And I have a habit of that happening. But again, it's one of these fights that you have to kind of take on the fight. I just want to mention here on this part of the show that if anyone has a question for Robert about training, you can call in now. I'll put the question on air as we continue to talk. And the number to call in if you do have a question is area code 213-943-3707. That's 213-943-3707. If you have a question for Robert about your dog, behavior, whatever, I'll be more than happy to put you on live, and Robert would be, I'm sure, more than happy to answer your question. So, but anyway, Robert, getting back to your training, so on average during the week, I guess you're fairly busy then with between board and trains and just training in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying for the winter to narrow it down to board and trains, just because, you know, I just have a real, it's really hard for clients to follow through with their, basically on private lessons with the homework during the winter. And that's great for me, because even, I mean, while board and train is a bigger paycheck, the per hour part is much lower, of course. But most clients, once I say, well, you know, be real with yourself, are you going to go out in the snow? You know, I went and bought like an Antarctic jacket so that I could be out in the snow and cold, but are you going to go do that an hour a day or 2 hours a day? And most aren't. So right now, you know, I have 3 board and trains with me, and then I've got 2 Scarlet strays that I'm working on.
Okay.
So, I mean, the good news is, you know, as you know, if you do it right, it doesn't take so long.
No.
We have another training rescue, supposedly, here in Kansas City. And, you know, we were reading a status, my partners at Dogs Listen to Me and I, were reading a status about a feral dog that had been taken in into this rescue program, and it recently passed away still at the rescue after 9 years. And in that 9 years, and the Post spoke about this braggadociously, saying, in the 9 years, unfortunately, or in the 9 years, we were never able to put a collar or leash on the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't push dogs past their threshold. And so, you know, and this is where it does get hard. I understand what you were saying about sometimes it's hard to not get so negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I struggle with it too, because I see something like that and I go, 9 years for a collar? Like that's day one. That's day one.
I understand what you're saying. It's ridiculous, but the thing is, and I'll go on my rants, you know, and then I'll go back and take some of them off and go back, because it's very frustrating, because you know the bigger, you know, it's like the big picture, right? You know where the problem is, and you know why there's so many dogs being destroyed, because of people's emotions and this whole love-based thing, and they're not reconciling how they're thinking. So, but yeah, promoting it, and that's why I give the people a hard time, these behavioralists that promote this garbage, they're in it. I mean, you can make a lot more money probably to do that, because that's how the culture is thinking. But I understand your comment on it. It's very frustrating, and even these animal rescues, and I've had the same frustration and the same difficulty, you know, trying to align myself that way, because it's a total different way of thinking. A lot of people in the animal rescue are really too emotional. You know, they're going into it thinking about the physical needs of dogs and feeling bad about dogs and not being able to come into the right relationship with the dogs through leadership. So it's a horrendous mess. But thankfully, you know, there's people, you know, and that's the thing, I don't want to lose this on, you know, on people. There's people like yourselves, and there's other people out there that definitely are making a real difference. I mean, that's how I see it. There's people making a real difference, Robert, like yourself. So,
I think it's getting better slowly. Mm-hmm. I think Peter Kane is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Peter's become a great friend of mine from afar. You know, and he's somebody who with whom I have developed like a dialogue of. You know, sometimes I just see something, and I'm frustrated, and I'll take a screenshot of it and text it to Peter, and
mm-hmm.
and just hearing Peter's take on it makes the day.
It does.
Yeah, and I think that it helps. You know, Peter is delivering a very oftentimes abrasive message,
mm-hmm.
Or in his delivery, it's abrasive. But people are, I think, starting to like the honesty, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I've noticed that with myself too, like, Peter kind of inspired me in a way to be a little bit more blunt about things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's working, you know, like, you know, I had a text from a client after I did a consultation a few weeks ago. And they said, oh, we're definitely going to sign up. We just have to come up with the funds. My favorite part of the consultation is that you said my dog was being an asshole. And she's like, and you said this moment after I called him a fur baby. And I was like, yeah, no more fur baby. Fur baby is gone. And I think people are responding to that. You know, every once in a while, you know, we post sort of content that we know it's going to be perhaps a little bit controversial on our page, and
mm-hmm.
we've been attacked by sort of not even positive trainers. It's more like positive trainer fans, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everything, and they've done everything from go attack our page to write 1-star reviews.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is, every single time that happens, it actually ends up backfiring, and then we get. Mm-hmm. You know, for every one of theirs, we get like 5 positive reviews from clients who hadn't ever thought it hadn't occurred to them to go write a review.
Mm-hmm.
But then they see us coming under attack, and they go, "But this guy's fixed my dog."
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to let somebody talk to him like that.
No.
So.
Well, the thing is, and I show this is, you know, what they're doing. They're contradicting themselves at so many levels. But the big issue is how they use learning. Theory, and what they're doing is they're totally exploiting it. They're not looking at this. I show this issue very clearly with the scripting itself, with the response, how it is a lot of these dog behavioralists and these pure positive people are making assumptions on a dog's state of mind based on the picture, how the pictures come together, which oftentimes is a total counterfeit. And what's happening is they're just relying on emotion to get through. They're not seeing that's the problem. So when you get specific, and I get very specific with it. People come in and make a comment on my page, I'll be, okay, let's talk about what you're leaning on for your basing your argument on is about learning. And it's amazing. I haven't got any bad comments in probably 3 weeks, 4 weeks, because I'll go in and I'll talk about the specific issue, because that's really what comes down to. I even talk about, you know, what's the problem here? It's how they're using learning. They're totally misrepresenting it. And so even this issue of physical force, they get all crazy about how people use a leash or a certain device. They're misrepresenting physical force. I mean, they're totally trying to package this up as some big, bad, evil thing. And in the end, you know, that's the problem is what they're doing. So there's an ethical, there's a moral and ethical problem here. And I think people, the public, will get wise, because ultimately, you know, the truth is the truth. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah, and I you know, I think they make it obvious, because they can't even just say, they can't even just leave it at, oh, physical correction isn't helpful. They have to add some other thing in, like, when people last time came and attacked our page, every comment had the word macho in it.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to equate what we were doing to us trying to somehow prove our masculinity.
Sure.
And, you know, and that's what they do with a lot of things. And this is sort of, to me, indicative of the whole school of thought. I don't know any trainer like you or myself or even Peter who has gone to another trainer's page that they've never utilized their services, never met, and left a review. You might leave a comment, but you would not leave a review on their business.
No, not like that. It's a very hateful, yeah, and that proves it out. That, and my point is, if what you're doing works so well, okay, if what they're doing works so well, you wouldn't have to prove anything. You know, you'd be the next whatever you want to be, Caesar Milan or whoever you hate.
You could just
take over the
business.
World. That's right. So that just proves itself. But the problem is they want to make it appear as though you're the only one who's going against them. It's the public. No, I mean, it comes out in the amount of dogs being destroyed. And that's why there's such a big disconnect with reality here, because people are not looking at the big issue here, saying, okay, why is it that, and I guarantee you in some of these countries, I would say Sweden and the UK, some of these places are really taking this ideology and banning remote callers. I guarantee you that the amount of dogs being killed is going up. I mean, if people were to look at it. I mean, it's a joke, because that's the thing. People, ultimately, dogs are being devalued. People, I show this ideology is about self. It's a very selfish way of thinking. It's not, and that's the thing about motives. When you look at the real motives as to why people say the things they do, if you get to the heart of the issue here and people being really honest about it, they're not being honest with themselves. My question is, do you really, really care about dogs, or do you care more about your own feelings and how the dog can meet your emotional needs without you having to come into right relationship and think different? So it's a huge problem. But anyway, I'm getting a little counter. I know these shows get in a minute. But Robert, if people want to get a hold of you for, say, in your area, how would they go about getting a hold of you through what you do, through your services?
Okay, sure. Yeah, so I have two websites. If you're looking to rescue a dog, scholarlystrays.org. And then I've got the business side, the dog, like if you've already got a dog and you just need some training, dogslisten2me.com.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those have contact forms, and those go straight to my email. I can take calls, but really, honestly, email is probably the best bet, just because it's easier to find a quiet time and sit and write an email. So that way I have some documentation. So through the website is the best, scholarlystrays.org and dogslisten2me.com.
Super.
So,
super. Well, thanks very much, Robert, for coming on today's show. We really appreciate the information. And again, I want to show that, hey, you know, there's people out there doing it right, and you certainly are one that's doing it right. So, and plan on having you back on a future show here shortly. We'll talk about that. But again, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dale. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.